The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
And homeschooling with health issues and loss and grief and major life changes and all of these things, you know, like I just discussed with someone, is our life. We go through these things and yet we keep going. Year after year, we just keep homeschooling. We keep on no matter what life throws at us. And so I hope that you can find some comfort, some encouragement, and just knowing that we need each other and we need community. And so thank you for coming and listening to these words. So I've been on this journey for 21 years now. When we started, we had two kids. I had just finished a degree in university, and I was working at Children's Hospital. It was insane. I would work nights, and then I'd meet him at Salisbury House, and he would switch kids with me. One of them was in kindergarten, but the other one he would give to me, and he'd go off to work, and I'd go home, and I'm going to admit some things. Just don't judge me. We would put on the Disney Channel, and he would sleep, and I would sleep. No, he would watch, and I would sleep. And that's kind of how we got through that part of our life. It took some years to figure out where we were headed. I'm not really sure if there was an aha moment of what is going on in the school. We need to pull her out. We need to pull them out. It wasn't really weird yet. You know, sometimes we talk about schools now and it's not hard to see why we don't want them in there. But at that time, this was 21 years ago. At that time, it wasn't as blatant as it is now. So my husband had a cousin who was kind of sick of her daughter being on the bus from 7 o'clock till 5 o'clock, and she was in grade one. So they decided that they were going to pull her out in homeschool. And I was intrigued. I didn't know anybody who was homeschooled. And I wish I could go back and apologize to the girl that I thought was so weird when I was in high school that was homeschooled. But it was not a known thing. People didn't, I just met somebody else who was homeschooled and is, you know, probably younger than me, but around my age. And I just am fascinated because we didn't know anybody. And so I was intrigued, and I said this at the Before You Begin panel. I have no idea what I was thinking, but I called up the principal and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to pull out my kid, and my son isn't going to come to kindergarten next year. Like, why would you call a principal and tell him that? Of course he's going to. He actually said to me, well, why don't you just try? Why don't you send them in September? We all know why he would say this now, but I had no idea. Send them in September and just see how it goes. Well, you know, I'm pretty sure they get funding for who's in there in September. So I did that. I was easily swayed. And off they went to school, and it was their last time going to school. But the next year I didn't call. I just didn't send them at all. And I think part of them being pulled out was the fact that you're going to see how unorganized that I am, and it still works in homeschooling. We missed that bus like every morning. I'd have to wave the guy on, you know, keep going, I'll take her in. She's not even out of bed yet. Anyway, next year I didn't call. And so we pulled our kids out. Our daughter was in grade three. Our son was in kindergarten. He still thinks that he went to school. I don't call it school. His kindergarten teacher actually said, you know, I think you should homeschool him. And it was because he would argue with her, no, dinosaurs were on the ark. They're not it wasn't millions of years ago. And I don't think that she knew how to respond to that. So she thought, yeah, he's a good candidate to be out of here. So here we are, two kiddos. We had also a six-month-old, and I loved those days. I was so eager. We taught them, we read Narnia, grade one. I don't know if he remembers any of it, but, you know, I loved reading Narnia to them. I'm on my third time of Narnia right now. We're actually in the second book right now. And, yeah, that's kind of how it goes, right? You just have to keep reading the same books over and over because you remember, oh, yeah, these kids don't know this. You know, and sometimes I forget, man, do these kids know anything? Because I just have to remember to repeat myself. So we read aloud together, the Read Aloud Hound book, really. I don't know if any of you have ever read that book, but it is an amazing book. It really hit my heart. And so the next few years, we had a couple more kids. Now I had 3 kids in 3 years. And it was getting challenging. I was done. I didn't want any more kids. I packed everything up in my van, my little van, every baby thing in my little van, and we drove to the crisis pregnancy center downtown, and I gave it all away. And they had a great lesson in seeing people eat from the dumpster, and I don't say that, you know, even jokingly. It was an amazing experience, even that. I kind of wish that I didn't give everything away, but it was interesting. And we had spent months living in a trailer in the States. We had homeschooled them on the road. We had spent time going through plantations. And so I thought in my mind, well, you can't do that with a big family, right? So here I was with these 3 little kids trying to homeschool these kids in elementary school. And that is a huge question that people have. How do you homeschool with babies and older kids? And for me, I set up a preschool in my house. I literally had a corner in my living room, and we had shelves of puzzles and books and so much that you can find online to print off, scissors and magazines that they could cut out. And I just, that's how I did it, because I don't know what your kids are like, but my kids don't stay, especially when they were little, they don't stay entertained for longer than 5 minutes. Like, it's exhausting, right? It's like, okay, what's next? Okay, what's next? And so at one point I would say, okay, in their schedule, okay, you are spending time with that one right now because I need to do this with these ones. And so it's good for them. It's good for them to have intentional playtime with their siblings. But during all of this, one of our kids had severe speech and language difficulties. He really wasn't talking at all when he was 3, which, you know, some kids don't. But he just, you could tell that he was missing pieces in his language as well. So the speech he wasn't talking, but the language he wasn't understanding. And so after getting referrals and having actually to spend some time in private speech therapy, we got on to the speech therapy in where we lived. And that also can add so much to the stress of your homeschool when now you have one of your kiddos who isn't learning the way that you thought they should or the way that your other kids did. Needing extra help when you're already stretched, it can be really overwhelming. And so I bought more stuff. You know, what can I do to help you? Where can I go to find things that can help him? We built obstacle courses. He had to learn every really preposition on, in, under. And so you do these things and you keep digging until you can find what works for your family and what works for your kid. The Lord has given each of us such a tremendous love for our children. We would not spend every waking moment with our children if he didn't, right? I mean, that alone can be so difficult. And so we become these mama bears and we become warriors in our children's lives. And we become prayer warriors. And it's amazing for me to think back, and when you're lost in the little years of just the day-to-day activities that you have to get through. They think they need to be fed 3 times a day. They need clean laundry. And then you realize, I can't do this on my own. And the Lord brings you back and pulls you back, and you realize that you've let go one of the most important aspects of our homeschooling, and that is spending time in prayer and giving it to the Lord and asking Him to give us the sustenance that we need each and every day. All right, then we had our sixth. And I had a 14 and a 12-year-old at this time, so at least I had help, right? My 14-year-old, I tell you, she's not 14 anymore. My 29-year-old, I think maybe this taught her how to run a home, be organized. She wasn't expected to run a home at the time, but she helped out. You know, she's the one, can I start supper? Can I do laundry? Can I help out? Can I organize things? And she still is to this day. And so that is a blessing as well. Then we had our seventh. And then in between our seventh and our eighth, we suffered a miscarriage. And I know that this happens to so many people. And I didn't actually really understand, and I was not a good support for people who had gone through this. I had a very good friend who had lost twins years earlier, and I actually went to her and apologized after, because I think that we all deal with things very differently. But for me, it absolutely broke me to the point where I actually had a very hard time going on each day. And some of us have the tendency to just kind of go inside ourselves, which is really dangerous, actually, because that is where you get this depression. And some people have to keep going on and have to get busy and have to do things and have to more conquer, right? And that was not me. And so I was hurting, and I had such a hard time focusing. I had such a hard time continuing on with my daily activities. I'd sit there in front of the fire and just stare at the floor, I remember. And then one day I just realized, you know, I can't do this. Who else is hurting here in me grieving in this way? And so I once again was pulled back to the Lord, and was really reminded to seek him in your hurt, seek him in your pain, and in seeking him, that is taking care of yourself. Last night at the Before You Begin, we were talking about taking care of yourself, you know, through burnout. And I guess this, you could kind of say this was a type of burnout, right? I mean, it was because of intense grief, but I had said the words, well, you need to take care of yourself. And it can be taken the wrong way in society, right? Put yourself first and you know, you be the best of you, just all these things. And in our culture, not in the world's culture, but in our culture, I think that needs to mean something very different. In taking care of yourself, that means feeding yourself spiritually. But it also means nourishing your body, especially after a loss like that. It is resting and finding the ability to rest. I know some people here know my sister. She is she's conference coordinator. I'm not sure if I said that already, but and she is a very much, all right, how can I help? And I remember when I told her that I had lost a baby, she was pregnant, and she was so fearful that I would resent her. And she said, I locked myself in the bathroom and I'm crying. And she has never had a miscarriage, and so she didn't understand, but she just felt my pain. And so then she was, okay, how can I help? My boys are bringing pizza, and I'm making you food, and I'm bringing it over. And that kind of won't surprise anyone if they actually knew her, because that's how we can help each other. That's how we can bless other people, right? In our needs, we can recognize what needs to be done. And so she was that to me. So when I was expecting baby number 8, my husband actually asked the farmer who owned all the land around our farm every year, will you sell it to me? No, I won't sell it to you. Okay, next year, will you sell it to me? No, I still won't sell it to you. Well, I think he actually just gave up and was like, okay, if you will stop asking me, I'm going to sell it to you. And so he did. And wow, that really took a turn in our life. So I'm probably dating myself, but does anyone remember, or were you there when Todd Wilson was at Calvary Town? Okay, so he had this speech, and we were laughing about it because my sister, before, when I was talking about it, she said, you just need to tell people your husband's a flamer, because he's like the most out there man, and he really is. And so Todd Wilson said, ladies, when you have a dreamer, and I remember him standing there going, fan the flames, fan the flames. And my sister said to me today, I've never met anybody who had to fan so many flames than you, because he is a dreamer. He keeps himself up at night, thinking of more things to do. I was writing this, okay, so I am also a procrastinator, so I was writing this on Thursday, or, you know, organizing it. I started on Wednesday night, but I was doing it Thursday, and he comes in, and he's like, this stock is going up, we need to buy it. And I'm like, you know that we're just learning investments, because this is his new thing is, you know, let's invest. And no, but we need to buy it. Okay, so we're not techie, so him and I are trying to figure out how to put money into some account so we can buy this stock. And that's my husband. He is a dreamer. And so we bought this land. And he's like, what are we going to do with it? It's 30 acres of field. I know. We're going to plant strawberries and have a strawberry farm. Okay. Let's go, because I've learned you just go with it. Don't argue. I'm tired. All right, so I encouraged him, and I supported him, and I planted, and I was really happy with hanging clothes on the line and milking a cow. But no, we were doing the strawberry life. So we planted trees. We took a field and we planted trees and we planted strawberries. And I kind of am my own worst enemy, because I get wrapped up in it too. And I'm like, what else can we do? We need more. And so here we are, raising kids, doing laundry, milking cow, just one cow. And although I have to say it wasn't me, it's my dream. And then, okay, kids, learn how to milk a cow. It's good for them, right? And then you have a kid with an allergy, sorry, I'm out. Like, ugh. And so it was all hands on deck. We all weeded. We all planted. We all built. We all were out there. I think that we are recovering now after a couple years off, and so now they might not have such bad memories of it. But my nephews came and lived with us. It was really a family affair, and I remember my nephew coming in and saying, Auntie Heather, where is Maxton? Okay, the kid was 8, so I really feel bad that we expected him to weed, but he was 8. I don't know. All right, we'll go look for him. And he comes back. You know where I found him? He was like a starfish on the shed roof, trying not to be seen. Yeah, that was Maxton. But it was life lessons. Our 10-year-old was put in charge of the petting farm. She hauled the animals out. She hauled the animals back. And if you knew her, when she was two, she'd play with bugs. Those were her friends. She had her own horse by the time she was eight. I was still afraid to go around the back of a horse at that time. And so she still, to this day, is very much an animal lover. So it's not as bad as it sounds. But she was dealing with people. And not everyone's careful with their kids. And not everyone teaches them to, you know, maybe not hoof the rabbit or throw the chicken. No, the chicken can't fly. And so she learned a lot in having to deal with people. We all learned a lot in having to deal with people. Our little kids learned that if you take out certain people's baskets, they actually will give you a tip. And so they also learned to weed, because that was my one stipulation. So, you know, he has the dreams, but then I have these stipulations. And I was like, you're not spraying. And he, what? No, you can plant them. Let's plant them, but let's not spray them. And so we picked every weed and went through so many gloves, because, man, thistle and thistle. And so the kids learned about buying gloves, and they should be leather, just so you, if you're ever planting strawberries and have thistle. So this was when I was expecting baby number eight, and then, you know, we had him, and that was fine. It actually, then we're having baby number nine, and you know, we get the whole, another one? And then you're having people come to your home and your farm, and people I don't even know are telling me this. And so I found myself actually crawling up and down the rows, because I was due in September, and this was, you know, summertime. And we did all this while we were trying to homeschool. We did farm markets in September, and so we usually didn't start school until October. I was planting greenhouse in April, and we were all out in the field by May. It's amazing how weeds come up before any plants, right? And so we're doing all of this, and our kids are learning. Is it actual book learning? No, it's not. But even the kids that I didn't think could work know how to work. You know, you have kids that have more tendency to want to... I have a techie kid. But man, he can still work. Like, he would rather learn coding, but he can still work. And it was probably because his cousins chased him off the roof when he was eight and forced him. And so it's not a bad thing to switch up your learning and have this, not this box idea of what homeschooling should look like. And I think that's where... when people ask, well, what do I do with if I'm doing a business? Well, that also is such a hard question, because what kind of business is it? Is it a family business? Is it your own business? And your own business is going to look very different. We also have another company, and so I've always had to do the books for that business as well. And that means sneaking off and finding time during the day. I wish that I could get up early in the morning. You know, you hear these stories. Oh, you know, I wrote a book. I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, every morning before homeschooling, to write this book. I will never write a book. I cannot get up in the morning. And I so desire to be a morning person, but it is so against who I am that I'm just gave in to myself and I don't even try anymore. The alarm goes off at 7, and for some of you, that's like, wow, that's late. No, 7, and I shut it off and sleep till 8 until I hear the kids starting the fire in the morning, and then I'll get up. So we learned how to deal with people. We learned how to mitigate through issues. We learned how to mitigate through problems, and they learned to work. We learned deadlines and the importance of timing. We learned how hard it is to have other people come to your home, and when they don't necessarily believe what you believe, especially when you're hiring them to work. And I had my 12-year-old weed alongside one, what do you think of abortion? And this girl was startled. Well, and I mean, her answer wouldn't have been our answer. Well, I think it should be up to a woman. And he came back to me, Mom, I need to know more about abortion. I don't even know what it is, but I don't think her answer was right. And so, you know, these learning things, it's interesting. They saw the stress in our life. They saw community come together. We did vegetable CSAs as well. And sometimes those, like if it's cold out, they're not going to grow, right? And so they saw community come together. We had other people, other communities that are outside of our community come in and show us such incredible grace and love and help us out. Sure, yep, take some of ours. Here's boxes of vegetables for you. And it's just so amazing and to have that interaction even with other communities. And we wouldn't have had any of that if we wouldn't have started this strawberry farm that we all loved so dearly. And that was in tongue-in-cheek. Because the kids loved the market. They would go around and help the vendors, and then they would get, I think we had, I don't know, 10 or 15 of these little crocheted whales, because every time they'd help, she'd give them another whale. They used them for mini sticks. But I mean, they loved parts of it, and parts of it were hard. And then loss happens. And we had a phone call. And we had just met with somebody, and we were on our road, and my father-in-law didn't live very long, very far away. And his wife had called and said, I can't get into the bathroom. And he's not answering me. And so we didn't think anything of it. Maybe now my first reaction would be different, but my first reaction then was, okay, well, whatever, we'll go and help out. And the night before, I'm just going to back up a minute. The night before we got this phone call, my father-in-law was over playing, like he always did, playing football. He would write plays on their hand, and he did it with my husband, and he did it with their neighborhood kids, and he was passing that on to my kids, or he'd play football or baseball. He was very, very into music with our kids, and so that night we had a festival recital, and he came to that, and so none of us saw it coming, and we went there, and she was right. We couldn't get in the bathroom, and my husband ended up having to force his way into the bathroom. And you know, loss is so individual, but experiences can be so traumatic. I worked in oncology. I worked with people who passed away all the time and had to deal with children dying. I had to deal with, you know, people losing their husbands, very young, people losing, you know, their loved ones. And then we walked in on a situation where we had to do CPR. We had to walk through that. And it was so, so hard. And I think even, I put a Kleenex in my pocket because I was crying even writing this, but we'll see if we can get through it. I think one of the hardest parts about it was walking through this with our kids, calling them up and saying, hey, you know what? We need you to come home. You're at work. We had adult children. We need you to come home. And why, what's wrong? It's grandpa, but you just need to come. Meet us at the hospital. And walk, no, I probably can't do it. Walking and seeing your kids so broken. So broken. The Kleenex is coming out of the pocket. Bear with me. I'm sorry. this person that is so loved. And now I'm going to put it into context with homeschooling, but you got to keep living. You got to keep going. And how do you do that? And so I think I will forever cry at these memories of walking through this with our adult children, and they adored that man, and he drove me nuts. He would be the one to take my kids and take them for ice cream and not tell me. I'm like, what? But he just, you know, he that was him. He didn't think anything was too big of a deal, and he. But they just, wow. If a grandparent could be adored, that was, or I don't think they could adore him anymore. So we had this season that was, it was harder than anything that I had ever experienced in my life. And this was not, it was my father-in-law. And I loved him dearly. But now, instead of navigating through my grief, because when you lose a child, my kids knew, and especially, like, my daughter was old enough to understand, and she was broken, but she wasn't really broken, right? It's harder, I think, even for my husband. I mean, I think he was more broken for me than he was broken, because it's us moms that carry, I think, the brunt of that. It was an early miscarriage, so I think it was. But this was their grief now that I am trying to walk through, and it was actually right before we were supposed to be planting. And so how do you go through that? How do you keep going? Well, you know what? You don't. And isn't that the beauty of homeschooling? I mean, you know, honestly, you could stop today and take a year off. Your kids aren't going to be behind. They're going to be behind in your mind. They're going to be behind in your understanding of where they are in the books. They're not going to be behind in the big scheme of things. Even if you want to compare them to public school kids, they will not be behind. And so at this point, we were teaching them how to grieve and grieve well. And we were pointing them to Jesus, because there is nothing else you can do. And there's nothing better you can do. And so we had a lot of work ahead of us. We were now planning a funeral instead of planning a planting day. And this is where we all need community so, so badly. Because things like this happen, right? Things like this are going to happen whether you have lost a parent or not. You might have lost a parent a long time ago. You might be walking in the stages of aging parents now, but we all are going to experience loss. And so when that comes, you can't plan for it, but when that comes, I tell you, community is going to be your saving grace. We had church people that came and cleaned my house, because we were already like weeding and outside, and then my house was embarrassingly a mess for the summer, because we were always outside, right? It was like, I just hope nobody ever came to stop by just to say hello. And so they came and they cleaned my house. They brought us food. We had a day the church put together people to come and weed for us. I think they might have pulled some plants, but that was okay with me. We had a family come and pick rocks with us, and it was a homeschooling family, come and pick rocks with us and just walk through this hard time with us. And I don't know how we would have made it if we didn't have these supports in our life. My parents have always been very supportive of our ventures. They're getting a little bit older now, and health issues and stuff. But when we first started, my mom and dad would come and stay with us. My dad liked to drive whatever vehicle he was taking people out with, and my mom would stay in with whatever little children were in the house. But even them they couldn't have been enough for that time. It was really, really a blessing to have a bigger community, because life is hard and it can be, it can seem almost cruel, can't it? And yet we're reminded that everything works for good in our life. I skipped a whole page without even looking at it. So we all have different needs in our grief. We all have different places in our grief. We all deal with things very differently. I was just talking to a family member a couple weeks ago. She lost her 15-year-old very, very unexpectedly. She told me that she actually said these words, and I looked at her. She said, you know, there's worse things in the world that could have happened than losing him. And he was their only son. She had suffered many miscarriages. They all adored, he has older sisters, and they all adored him. They were homeschooling family. And so I said, you know, I have walked through this with a friend of mine. She also has just lost her son, but she's not saved. So I could see a different side of this. So this is why I was talking to her about it. And I said, you know what? Like, people would think you were crazy for saying that. You know, that in our lives or in my life, that would be one of the scariest things, is the thought of losing your child. And she said, you know, I have no doubt he's with Jesus. None at all. He would carry around a profession of faith that he wrote himself. And he carried it around, I guess, as a reminder. And it's actually, they put that on the back of his tombstone. She said a couple weeks before he died, she was reminded of her 20-year-old self. And she said, I told Jesus, you have my life no matter what. In hard times or not in hard times, I will glorify you. And she felt a couple weeks before he passed away that God was asking her that again. Are you still going to glorify me? Do I still have your heart and your life? And she said, you know, I realize that my kids and my husband and my grandkids, they're not my own. And I will still praise him no matter what. He gave me these gifts, but they're not mine. And wow, that just hit me. They're not mine. I actually have no control of my life at all. And so it's easier to look back and reflect and see where I needed to be different. It's easier when you're out of it, right? It's been years now, and it's easy to think of how I should have acted, how I should have been. But I think that when we walk through these things, the Lord can use us to help others, first of all. And maybe not. I am so not a public speaker. And so, you know, I'm actually much better now. You should have seen the first time I did this. I was telling somebody that I felt like I was even outside of myself. I was so nervous. My heart was like beating in my chest. And so not necessarily speaking and up and up, but how can he use us to help others? Can we bring a meal? How can we teach our kids to be that support for other people? Because how are they going to learn that if we don't show that to others and be that support? Even in our immense grief, our reaction to grief is pointing them to Jesus. Are we praising him in our grief, in our hard times, when we are just at our wit's end? Someone said last night, you know, I always apologize when I yell at them. Man, I have a lot of apologizing to do, especially, you know, in homeschooling every day. So I'm a yeller. I'll just admit it. I'm a yeller. I'm going to start apologizing a lot. Actually, now you know what they do. They go, all right, calm down, calm down. And it works because it's totally embarrassing that your kids are telling you to calm down. I've been doing this for 21 years. Yes, I will calm down now. So I have Job 121 in my bathroom, and it says, the Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And he's going to take away again. You know, my parents, my dad's going to be 80 next year. My mom's going to be 75. And my dad still goes in the woods and cuts down trees and chops wood. My mom said, you know, we have enough wood for like 10 years. We're not going to be alive for 10 years, she said. But, you know, it keeps them young. But that doesn't matter. That's no reassurance, right? I'm going to feel that grief again. I'm going to have that hard time again. I'm going to have that loss again. I'm going to grieve with my children. We've gone through, we have two that are married and we have grandkids, and that's a whole other blessing because, you know, you can cuddle them and when they cry, you can give them back. But you also have no control over them whatsoever. So when you don't agree with their parenting or when you are afraid for their life because they're doing something that they shouldn't be, you really don't have any control, right? So that is a whole new area of life that we're walking through, and I pray a lot for them. Something that I didn't touch on. So we have 10 kids. So we were actually expecting our 10th and not happy about it because 9 was good. You're like, 9's a lot, right? Like, it's a lot of kids. And so we didn't really want 10. And I was listening to Anna Green Gables the other day, and they were talking, because I listen to books and I'm weird like that. So I was listening and they were talking about, you know, when you're pregnant, you don't get uptight because the baby might have this awful disposition. And it just dawned on me, oh, that's why she was like that. It was me. But who knows? Was it grief? I'm not going to say resentment because I mean, I have 10 kids. I love my babies. I love my... it took a little bit to love this one. So we actually did a couple things that we had never done before. We told our oldest daughter that we were expecting because she was grieving so much. And it hurt me so much. I can handle my own grief. I can't handle theirs. I just want to take it, you know? And so we told her. And then we went and found out what we were having because I don't know why. Because I'd never done that before. And then I thought it would make it better. And it's not that I didn't want her. It was a girl. And I'm like, yay, I have two boys and I didn't really want another boy because they are, wow, we don't have drywall in our house. So my father-in-law never knew we were expecting this one. And he is going to have such a joy meeting her in heaven because he just loved his babies. And so we had her in November after he passed away in May, and she was the most revolting little baby I'd ever met in my life. I called her a demon child last night, and I felt like people were offended that I said that, so I wasn't going to call her that today. But she was the most colicky baby I'd ever seen in my life. Like, I spent so much money going to Tim Hortons at 4 in the morning. And because I would have to get up and just drive. And I said to my husband one day, I see why people drive into the river. And he said, should I come home? I said, I see, because it's hard, right? It's hard. I'm a little bit afraid for her because I kept my phone right by her ear with this noise machine. And you're not supposed to keep it that close. But that was the only way that she would sleep. And so, you know, walking through this with her, and she flipped a switch at 14 months, and now she cries when I leave. And pretty much that's the only time she cries. She just is a mama's girl, and she actually told me that she was never leaving me and never getting married, and I said, well, you know, I'll find someone for you. I was pregnant at my son's wedding. It was kind of embarrassing, actually. But somebody called me a hippie mama, and then I was good with that because I've always wanted to be a hippie. I just never thought I was good at it. So we welcomed her. We welcomed a daughter-in-law. Now we're welcoming grandchildren, and we are learning to walk closer with Jesus every single day in every single area of our life. So the last big ta-da in our life for a while. I mean, you know, besides the stock thing. I'm letting him do that because that stresses me out. Isn't that like gambling? I always thought stocks were like gambling. And then I remember my eBay days where I was like, I must get that Gymboree outfit. And I would, you know, I'm dating myself probably because nobody uses eBay anymore. But I would, you know, that felt like gambling to me, and it was too much fun. So I feel like stocks aren't a good idea for me. But we packed up our family. And so now I call myself a recovering strawberry farmer because we sold our farm and we moved actually away from the area that we grew up in. And we moved away from our daughter and grandkids, but now they come to stay. And we're not, it's an hour and a half. It's not like it's 3 days, right? And then we dragged our son and his wife, and she must love us for that, out with us. And we had a huge life change because here we grew up here. We grew up in Stonewall, and we were born and raised there. And we had lived on our farm for 24 years. And we packed up 2 barns, 2 greenhouses, a shop, a Quonset, a house, and I'm missing something. Anyway, we packed all that up. Oh, a farm store. And we moved, and we're still trying to find stuff because we kind of threw it all over the place. But don't be afraid to follow the Lord in any area of your life. That's part of getting on your knees and giving everything, giving your grief, giving your joy, giving your anxiety, giving your worry to Christ. And I will say that for our homeschooling journey, this has been amazing. I know I see a face from out my way. So, because we didn't really have a really great homeschool. I mean, the people were great. Don't get me wrong. We didn't have great connections because there wasn't somebody who took the baton and said, I will do this. I will plan field trips. And, you know, we all sit there and go, well, you know, there aren't many field trips in our homeschool group, or we don't, you know, we don't really get together as moms. And yet, I don't know, in my mind, it's like it's someone else's job. It's not mine, it's someone else's, and maybe we need to think about sometimes that is our job. But the homeschool community where we moved to is amazing. The moms are amazing. My kids have friends. This is new to me. My 17-year-old is never home, and I'm not even sure if I like it. But I'm like, who are you with now? But I don't know these people, but they must all be good, so okay. And so I just want to, the last thing I want to say is, find your people, because through all of this, through grief, through pain, through joy, I mean, we planned a wedding, and we've actually planned to, my daughter got married in our living room because, you know, COVID hit, and she was like, they're shutting down, wedding tomorrow. All right, there goes that sister. What are we making? And she kind of made all the food, and, yeah, even the wedding in our yard, we need people. We need our community. We need help. We can't do this all ourselves, especially when there's trials thrown in there too. Because guess what? Life doesn't stop when you have a trial. It doesn't. It keeps going. Life keeps going when you're hurting. And sometimes when you're hurting, your kids aren't. And sometimes when your kids are hurting, you're not. And how do you navigate through the, actually, no, that's not true. They make you hurt, don't they? But how do you navigate through that? And I think community is so, so incredibly important. And I, 21 years later, I am learning what I actually missed. We did have some homeschool groups, but they weren't as big. They weren't as many people, and they weren't as community-minded. We kind of were all in our own little groups, and we were okay with that. So I would just encourage you, and through That's what I've learned in my life. First of all, it's all Jesus. It's all Jesus. I would not be here still homeschooling until I'm like completely gray and probably hunched over if it weren't for Jesus, because I have many more years of this left. And you know what? I don't plan on stopping ever. It's not even in my mind. Even with all of the trials and even how hard it is, it's not even in my mind. But I know that no matter what comes, I have the absolute most precious gift of joy and peace, even when peace doesn't even seem possible. And then if you're not in a group, if you're not in a community, in a church community, pray for it. Pray for that. Pray for your community. And sometimes that means that we have to get out of our comfort zone and become that community and become those people who other people need as well. So I just want to thank you for listening to me ramble for the last 50 minutes. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer. I'll be here for a little bit. I'm actually at the Mentor Center after this as well. But I really appreciate you being here.
Once again, the Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording. Please visit them at learninghouse.ca.